This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. A round of high-level talks in Cairo meant to bring about a ceasefire and a hostage deal to at least temporarily end the 10-month Israel-Hamas war in Gaza ended Sunday without a final agreement. VOA's Joe Ramsey.
Talks will continue at lower levels in the coming days in an effort to bridge remaining gaps, according to the official who spoke on the condition of anonymity and said lower-level working teams will remain in Cairo to meet with mediators, the United States, Qatar, and Egypt in hopes of addressing remaining disagreements. The official called the recent conversations, which began on Thursday in Cairo and continued through Sunday, as constructive. The development came after Israel and the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah traded heavy fire early on Sunday, but backed off from sparking a widely feared all-out war as both sides signaled their most intense exchange in months was over. Joe Ramsey, VOA News, Washington.
Russia prepared.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky saying Sunday the country's incursion into the Kursk region was launched preventively in order to stop Russia from occupying Ukraine's cities of Kharkiv and Sumy. Ukraine claims to have seized considerable Russian territory in the Kursk region, including scores of small towns. A British safety advisor working with a team of journalists was killed after a Russian missile struck a hotel in Ukrainian city. 38-year-old Ryan Evans was staying at the Hotel Sapphire with colleagues in Ukraine's eastern Donetsk. This is VOA News. North Korea says that leader Kim Jong-un has now supervised a demonstration of new exploding drones designed to crash into targets and is pledging to spur development of such weapons to boost his military's war readiness. Kim has been flaunting his growing military capabilities amid tensions with Washington and Seoul. North Korean photos of the test showed a white drone supposedly crashing into and destroying a target resembling a South Korean battle tank. North Korea's drone display comes as the U.S. and South Korean militaries continue a large-scale exercise aimed at enhancing their combined capabilities to cope with North Korean threats. U.S. Vice President Democrat Kamala Harris has now raised $540 million in the little more than a month since she began her race for president. Campaign said on Sunday, Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman.
A memo released by Harris campaign manager Jen O'Malley Dillon said that the top line figure included an $82 million surge that came in last week during the Democratic National Convention. Vice President Harris became a candidate for president on July 21st when President Joe Biden stepped aside. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has struggled to regain media attention and momentum since the Democratic Party swapped candidates. Harris and her running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, take their campaign for the White House on a bus tour through Georgia next week, looking to build support in a state looming large in the November 5th election. Polls show a close race between Harris and Trump, with Georgia among seven states likely to determine the outcome.
French broadcast media reported on Sunday that the founder and CEO of the popular messaging service Telegram has been detained at a Paris airport. AP correspondent Ayan Kim.
Pavel Durov, a dual citizen of France and Russia, was placed in police custody after traveling from Azerbaijan. Local sources say the 39-year-old is the subject of an arrest warrant on allegations his platform has been used for drug trafficking, child sexual content, and fraud. Russian state media is reporting the Russian embassy in France has demanded consular access to Durov. Telegram has nearly a billion active monthly users, with the encrypted platform becoming a major source of information and disinformation about the war in Ukraine. I'm Nayan Kim.
Tens of thousands of Rohingya refugees have rallied in South Bangladeshi coastal district where they live in sprawling camps, marking the seventh anniversary of their mass exodus from Myanmar. They gathered in an open field in a camp in Cox's Bazar district Sunday, demanding safe return to Myanmar's Rakhine state. They carried banners and festoons reading, "Hope is home," and we Rohingya are the citizens of Myanmar. On August 25th of 2017, hundreds of thousands of refugees started crossing the border to Bangladesh amid indiscriminate killings and other violence in Myanmar. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Monday, August 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Rwanda and DR Congo foreign ministers meet again in Angola in 2 weeks. Research shows that African youth prefer democracy to any kind of authoritarian alternative.
Former President Walz ECOWAS called President Boakai and his team to order, because as you know, Liberia has enjoyed 21 years of interrupted peace. It is very critical that the state of the country is maintained.
Former Liberian President George Weah seeks the intervention of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, for what he calls attacks on his party and the current government.
We are indeed concerned with the level of insecurity in general. What's specifically worrying us right now is what we are seeing in DRC and indeed in many other contexts is an increasing set of attacks on humanitarian workers.
And attacks on humanitarian workers in the DRC hamper their efforts to care for thousands of refugees in IDP camps. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Liberian President George Weah is seeking the intervention of the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, for what he calls attacks on his party, the Coalition for Democratic Change, CDC, by the government of President Joseph Boakai. Denise Nipson reports from Monrovia.
Liberian police and CDC supporters clash on August 22 at the party headquarters. The government says it was due to a drug raid within its vicinity. In his letter to ECOWAS the next day, former President Weah described the eviction as premeditated and the latest example by the Boakai administration to trample on political freedoms and stoke tension in Liberia. Janga Ko is the national chairperson of the CDC.
The former president wants ECOWAS to call President Boakai and his team to order, because as you know, Liberia has enjoyed 21 years of uninterrupted peace, and it is very critical that the stability of the country is maintained. But in a situation where the current government is violating the laws of the country, violating the rights of citizens, or citizens who revolt, like you saw the incident at the CDC headquarters, where the police has gone there twice, and the latest on Thursday resulting into these brutal attacks against unarmed civilians. And all of these things are utter provocations.
Chairman Cole says the CDC preserved peace in Liberia during the Weah administration and is not interested in derailing aid.
So nobody should create the impression that the CDC wants trouble. No, because the CDC controlled state power and peacefully surrender it. Nobody who does not want peace will surrender power on such a thin margin. So the government should stop the hypocrisy. The government should focus on some immense challenges Liberia faces.
Information Minister Gerald Limick Pierre turned down our request for an on-the-record interview. He said to a Facebook messenger text that the government will respond if necessary at an appropriate time. Clarence Monibar is a former presidential candidate and political leader of the Liberian National Union Party. He welcomes the decision by former President Weah to reach out to ECOWAS, but says both parties are heading in the wrong direction.
We are a nation that is still lacks the leadership that we need in this country. We need to be talking about what really matters to the people of Liberia, not two political parties that over the last 20 years have alternated power. Yes, there's need for peace and calm, but what needs to be paramount? As a country and as a nation, we continue to focus on the wrong agenda that would transform this country. So that's the frustration in terms of what happened last week. People continue to put party politics over nation.
Adosi Maimane is the executive director of the Center for Transparency and Accountability in Liberia. He says former President Weah's letter is a step in the right direction as far as democracy is concerned, although he may not be in total agreement with its content.
So have regional partners complain about actions of the government that are not in line with democratic best practices. That's the way to go. Expect our leaders, national actors, decision makers, policy makers, those in power and those in waiting to use the law, to use whatever established framework to channel their grievances.
In 2019 and during the Weah administration, former Justice Kambeda Janes sought redress from the ECOWAS court following his impeachment by the Supreme Court of Liberia. The ECOWAS court ruled that the administration should reinstate and compensate Justice Janes for wrongful removal. However, the Weah government did not implement the ECOWAS court's ruling. Now some Liberians are not sure how exactly former President Weah would like for the regional body to respond to his letter. For Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipsin in Monrovia, Liberia.
Attacks on humanitarian workers in the Democratic Republic of Congo are increasing and hampering their efforts to care for thousands of refugees in IDP camps and mitigate the threats of Ebola and Mpox. Grant Lethe is the country representative for UNICEF in the DRC. He told VOA's Chinedu 4 that authorities should do more to protect staff and bring perpetrators of the crimes to justice.
We are indeed concerned with the level of insecurity in general. What's specifically worrying us right now is what we are seeing in DRC and indeed in many other contexts is an increasing set of attacks on humanitarian workers. So we are calling on the government to basically put processes in place where when this has happened, then the perpetrators, you have to be held accountable for their actions and be taken to justice. The frontline workers of humanitarians, but also health workers, Congolese health workers and teachers are also having to work in very, very difficult conditions and are often being directly targeted. So this is one level of insecurity for humanitarian workers. Another issue, of course, is when you are, you know, have teams working in outbreaks such as Ebola, but now including Mpox, we also need to be looking at how to make sure that the frontline workers are safe. So we have to clarify the appropriate personal protection needs and the medical protocols to ensure that frontline workers are not being infected.
Experts say where there is insecurity, what follows sometimes rape in that particular area, in that particular country. There's been reports of horrific attacks on women. To what extent is that hampering or hindering your efforts to reach out to people? It's those who can come to camp for assistance.
The phenomenon of rape and sexual violence and gender-based violence has long been a significant concern in Eastern DRC. We are seeing two different dynamics. One is effectively in the conflict zones. And very often, not just in DRC, but as we know around the world, you know, very often this is kind of used as a form of trying to demoralize a community, trying to humiliate them. It's rarely almost, you know, sexual violence used as a weapon of war. So in these hard to reach areas, our concern is humanitarian access, so having safe access for humanitarian workers to be able to get in and then provide the immediate care from a medical, a psychological, and then later on an overall social, and if the victims choose it, a legal perspective. The other dynamic we've seen emerge very strongly since last year is inside the IDP camps. There are networks which have been set up where the IDP women and girls, from a sort of a survival point of view, are prostituting themselves.
There's transactional sex, but we are seeing networks being set up to turn this into a fairly significant business. So sexual violence in DRC remains at the top of our list of concerns.
That's Grant Lathy, the country representative of UNICEF in the DRC, speaking with VOA's Echinedo Four from Bunia. Meanwhile, Angola last week hosted the third ministerial meeting between DRC and Rwanda delegations in its capital, Luanda. A statement from the Angolan Minister of Foreign Affairs said the meeting focused on the analysis of the peace agreement proposal presented by the Angolan president to his counterparts from Rwanda and from the DRC. The statement adds that the ministers agreed to meet again in 2 weeks after holding a meeting of experts later this week. Father Jean-Claude Artsemeso is the CEO and president of Congo Minerals USM. He tells me that he thinks the two parties are making progress.
I can say that they have been making a lot of progress. The Congolese requirement is very precise. They want Rwanda to take out of Congo all their militaries, to let them go back to Rwanda. And the Congo going to be putting in place a joint force with Rwanda. And I think the suggestion that the U.S. also and Angola and the U.N. put a joint force in place to look for the interarmory, like militaries, and to bring them back to Rwanda. And I think because of Paul Kagame, if he had his military in the Congo, it's because they were trying to look for those militaries in the DRC. Now they decided that they're going to have a joint force to look for them and bring them back to Rwanda. And I think they're going to be signing on that. We never know what's going to happen between them. But it looks like that's where they are.
It seems that these talks have the support of the international community. But the trouble is implementation. Do you think they will implement what they agree on in Angola?
The SADC is very clear. They have been going from talk to talk. And this is the last chance for Kagame. If he doesn't follow up with this last talk, they will attack Rwanda. They're going to push them out by force.
Who will do that? There are people who say DR Congo doesn't have the capability to protect its territory.
No, the SADC, the South African Command, the South African region, like South Africa, all the countries who belong to the South African region. We need hope, we need peace, and we're hoping that this time all this relationship going to bring peace in Congo.
That's Father Jean-Claude Artsemeso, the CEO and President of Congo Minerals USA. He spoke with me earlier from the state of Virginia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today's Monday, August 26th. See to come on our platform program, Samson O'Malley Sports. African youth prefer democracy to any kind of authoritarian alternative, says Afrobarometer, the Pan-African Research Network. However, its latest survey says African youth are also more likely than their elders to be dissatisfied with the way democracy works in their respective countries. Shannon Van Wykosa is Afrobarometer's digital portfolio manager. She tells James Barty that African youth surveyed in 39 countries are also likely to tolerate military intervention when their elected leaders abuse power.
We see that on average, almost two-thirds, so that's 64% of youth aged 18 to 35, prefer democracy over any other kind of government. They join older cohorts in rejecting dictatorship and military rule, but are more likely to accept military takeovers, and the reason being when elected leaders abuse power for their own ends.
Shannon, then let me ask you, you said that the youth prefer democracy, but are more likely to accept coup d'etats if need be. Tell us more why this is so.
while demand for democracy remains strong, what citizens feel they're getting in terms of democracy is far weaker. Young adults are slightly more likely than those over the age of 55 to say they are not very satisfied or not at all satisfied with the way their democracy is functioning. African youth also express less trust in public institutions than older citizens. So only 44% of respondents aged 18 to 35 say they trust their president somewhat or a lot, compared to 52% of those aged 56 and above. So this poor supply of democracy, reflected in dissatisfaction with functioning, perceived corruption, and weak trust, may have contributed to some tolerance for military intervention. On average, across 39 countries, a slim majority of adults say it's legitimate for the armed forces to take control of government when elected leaders abuse power for their own ends.
We have seen in recent times many protests around Africa. So can we tie this to some of the findings of your survey?
So in terms of civic engagement, we see that youth are more likely than elders to express dissatisfaction with democracy, mistrust in elected leaders, and the willingness to act as military intervention of elected leaders who abuse power. But on that same side, we also see that youth report lower rates of political engagement than the elders across a variety of indicators, including voting in national elections. Where we see youth outstrip the over 55 cohort slightly is when it comes to participating in demonstrations or protest marches, particularly during these previous 12 months. Another form of engagement in which youth trail older generations is contact with leaders and representatives. A third of young respondents say they contacted a traditional leader during the previous year, compared to 39 to 43% of middle-aged and nearly half of those above age 55. So what we're seeing, we can relate back to the data in the way where we see that young people are more likely than their older or elder counterparts to come out and participate in protest action.
How large was your survey? I mean, how many people did you talk to? How did you talk to them? How many countries were represented?
So Afro-Promises Roundline surveys were conducted in 39 African countries. The findings of our Roundline survey is based on 53,444 face-to-face interviews. Afro-Promises national partners conduct face-to-face interviews in the language of the respondent's choice, and national samples of 1,200 to 2,000 yield country-level results with margins of error of approximately 2 to 3 percentage points at a 95% confidence level.
Shannon Van Wycosa is Afrobarometer's digital platform manager. She spoke with my colleague James Bate from Cape Town, South Africa. Meanwhile, here in the U.S., Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance said Sunday that he will not impose a federal abortion ban in the U.S. if he and Donald Trump win the White House. Meanwhile, the Democratic presidential ticket of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz keeps pushing its messaging for reproductive rights and announced a record-breaking number in campaign donations. VOA's Veronica Baldras Iglesias has the details.
Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance was asked Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press whether he would commit to not imposing a national abortion ban if elected in November.
I can absolutely commit that.
His answer came 2 days after Trump wrote on his Truth social media platform, quote, "My administration will be great for women and their reproductive rights." But with some Republicans in Congress actively pushing for abortions to be banned nationwide, Vance was pressed further on NBC on whether Trump would veto that type of legislation if he were to return to the White House.
I think he would. He said that explicitly that he would.
And America,
the Harris-Walz Democratic presidential campaign warns that reproductive rights would be obliterated under a Trump administration. Vice presidential nominee Tim Walz spoke about the matter during the recent Democratic National Convention.
And they will ban abortion across this country, with or without Congress.
The DNC overall was hailed as success by analysts. Democrats hope it will translate into a bump in the polls. Adding to the celebratory mood, the Harris Walls campaign announced Sunday that it has raised $540 million since it launched. Senator Bernie Sanders, an independent, has expressed cautious optimism that Vice President Kamala Harris's road to the White House is clear.
I think it's going to be a rough campaign. I think the vice president now has a very good chance to win it. She's certainly going to win the popular vote by millions of votes, and I think she has a great chance to win many of the battleground states.
Republican Senator Tom Cotton disagrees.
Because Donald Trump has been president before. The American people know what he did. They know that he understands the kind of pain they've suffered the last 4 years under Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, and I think that's why they're ready to return Donald Trump to the White House.
Both campaigns have several events planned for this week.
It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, Douglas. We begin the sport in Poland, where Botswana's Lesile Tebogo made it back-to-back wins in the Diamond League this week when he stomped to victory in Silesia, Poland on Sunday. Going into the 200 meters race as the man to beat, the Botswana sprinter lived up to the billing, clocking a meeting record time of 19.83 seconds ahead of Alexander Ogando, who came in 19.86 seconds, while American Kenny Bedan was third in 20 seconds. The Olympic champion is proving untouchable since winning gold at the Paris Games, and the meeting in Poland was yet another example of his growing reputation. In the 800 meters event, Olympic champion Kenya's Emmanuel Wanyonyi was beaten to second place by Canadian Marco Arap, who cruised to an easy victory in a meeting record time of 1 minute 41.86 seconds to cross the finish line ahead of Wonder Kid Wanyonyi, who clocked 1 minute 43.23 seconds. In the 100 meters event, Marie-Jessie Toulouse-Smith was involved in a photo finish contest with Jamaica's Tia Clarton, who delivered a standout performance, setting a new personal best of 10.83 seconds in the 100 meters. And now to basketball, where Hungary was so ruthless on Sunday as they beat Senegal 63-47 to win the FIBA Women's Basketball World Cup 2026 pre-qualifying tournament, which concluded at the BK Arena in Kigali after suffering a shock 63-61 defeat to Senegal in Group C earlier in the week. The Hungarian ladies stepped on the floor knowing that allowing Senegal to apply their physicality and fast break plays would turn out costly. And now to rugby, where South Africa men national rugby side, the Springbok coach Rassie Erasmus has named a 37-man squad for the upcoming rugby championship test against New Zealand in South Africa. The Bucks will tackle their rivals at Ellis Park on the 31st of August and in Cape Town Stadium on the 7th of September. The world champions have been boosted by the return of a few heavyweights who were sidelined by injuries of late. The Bucks squad has been increased from 33 players to 37, and the players will assemble in Johannesburg on Thursday. In handball news, Egyptian clubs Al Ahly and Zamalek have been handed tough groups in this year's Super Globe, scheduled to take place this September. Host and African champions Al Ahly are placed in Group B, where they will face off against European champions Barcelona and Australian representatives Sydney University. Meanwhile, Zamalek of Egypt, representing the host country, finds themselves in Group A alongside Vesperem of Hungary and Brazilian side Handball. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Douglas, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, August 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, X, formerly Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Douglas Simpuga in Washington, wishing you a great week.
Health Organization recommends that babies be exclusively breastfed for the first 6 months of life. On the next edition of Our Voices, we'll explore how breastfeeding can contribute significantly to the child's survival and look at options for new mothers to produce or get access to safe breast milk. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on the Voice of America.
VOA Africa presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500, and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source.